want to read to you something that I wrote this morning, because when I get ready to give a talk, the principal thing that I look for is, what is the one line that will run through what I wish to say? And then, just like music, hopefully, you have this theme, or you have a pedal tone. And because it is the core of it, everything that is spoken, emoted, is a movement around that. And to start with giving you always this essential idea, this central theme, allows you to at least intellectually have the basis of what it is that we're attempting to do. That's why we have the key lessons that we do. And it's why I, from time to time, will read to you something that I've written that might have been the key lesson had I written it a little bit sooner. As with all of these things, and particularly with some of the talks, this one included, and others that are going to be forthcoming, do the very best that you know how to do to listen from within the wisdom pool. What does that mean? It means to listen with as much stillness as you know how to have. Because God only knows, and there's no exception to this rule, any one of 100,000 individual words spoken by themselves or in context with one another can set that pool into frappe mode. Some people, the word God, take the word temptation, use the word devil, Satan, use the word evil, use the word cookie, I don't know. Well, it's true, isn't it? And see, now look what I've done. Yeah, cookie, bacon! Uh-oh, not the bacon word. And look what happens. And we get excited. Or negative. Or shut down. Because my father spoke to me like that. Or my mother never said that word love. Or I've been so stupid my whole life, there's no chance, and now I see the proof of it. One of 10,000 things can happen, but if you'll just work to remember yourself and be as still as you can, then the real seed, the real energy, and the real movement of all that's intended will reach you, and nothing will set you away from what we're trying to do. So here is the essential idea for this talk. Only to the degree that we perfect our love in God do we come to realize oneness. And only God can perfect our love in Him. Only to the degree that we perfect our love in God do we realize the essential oneness for which we are seeking. But only God can perfect our love in Him. This is maybe the mystery of the ages. Einstein said, the central urge of every atom is to return to its source. We as human beings are literally fashioned. First, we could say from the stuff of the stars themselves, because that's true. But the stuff of the stars is a covering for the celestial. And the celestial seeks itself. It may sound highfalutin, it may sound too broad to say such things because our minds are fairly isolated and they've been fairly conditioned into a series of very limited relationships that the world makes available, into which the whole idea of, number one, of this inherent longing that we have to find love. And that not understanding the inherent need to find love, we don't understand the inherent gift that love has given us by which to find what we search for. And I don't think there's one of us who hasn't, at some point in our lives, set out and wanted, and we'll bring it right down to earth. I want to know you. I meet you, we talk, I'm attracted to you. I'm talking basic relationship. I want to. In all ways known, I want to enter into you. I want you to enter into me. That's what I want. And I'm not speaking of the mere superficial physical act. I'm saying that there is a longing in the human heart. In the beginning, God knows what happens to us as human beings. We get so beat up, so betrayed. We find what nascent love we have is rejected by individuals who, having had relationships before, have no idea how to let anything in at all and only want to take what they need and then abandon the rest of us as though we're just chaff, which then everyone becomes, and everyone becomes chaff. Dried out husks of hearts because we've been hurt so many times. But the essential need inside of the individual at the outset of that has no inkling. It doesn't think to itself, am I going to be hurt? When you start out the first time you ever want to know something about love, there's not a thought in your mind about, am I going to be hurt? Not one. There is just the need of that love to find what fulfills it. That's all there is in that heart when it sets out. And I want to make it clear to you now that even if you're rejecting or resisting or not understanding what I'm saying, if you look closely, you will see there was a time in your life, whether it was the simplest thing. I remember when I was a boy, I just loved to go for walks. I was fortunate. I had a place where we lived. It had property to it. And I just loved to go out. And there were these green hills, and I could roll down them. And I'd spend hours rolling down these hills. It explains a lot, doesn't it? And I remember, and I'd come to a stop at the bottom of the hill, and I'd lay beneath these big eucalyptus trees, and I'd look up at the sky through the leaves, and the wind would be making the leaves shudder. I remember this so distinctly. And I loved that. And it doesn't matter whether the individual has this inherent love for nature. They have an inherent love for art. They have an inherent love for music. They have an inherent love for other human beings if they happen to be that gifted. And that inherent love the individual has is a God-given gift. They are not the ones that produce inside of themselves the wish to, and now I'll enlarge the idea, to merge. A child doesn't know the word merge. Don't you remember fascination as a child? See, we have negative fascination now. Now we have become fascinated with the interior workings of our own mind, its regrets, its resentments, the past. We've become fascinated with an imaginary world, and an imaginary world, by the way, that cannot fulfill one thing because not one thing in it is real. Only what is real can fulfill what is real. And we want... In the beginning, I use that word, and this, let me say this again. Take a deep breath so we're all on the same page. Is there anyone here without battle wounds? Jeez. You won't meet a human being that doesn't have scars. The question is, Do I want to live from that restricted field of bitter experience that insists, even prior to the moment where it's possible to engage the possibility of a new way to merge with life somehow through some relationship, that even prior to that, it has isolated me to the point where I won't even make the smallest step forward because I don't want to be hurt again. I gave myself to something. I know men and women, all of us do. I gave myself to my career and look what it gave me back. Because when I set out and envisioned being a Fortune 500 president or whatever it was, that whatever goal a person is, some guy just says, I set out to be a great plumber. And I didn't get back what I wanted to. I set out to have a relationship with another human being. And isn't it true? Don't we test? Do you know what it means to test? Don't we? It's sort of like this. If you could see it, it's kind of like, I'm going to give you a little bit. Here, take this. What are you going to do with it? Yeah, I'm going to tell you a little bit, not too much first. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. Unless you're one of those people who, when you meet somebody, here's my life story. Here, this is the whole thing. What do you think? We know people like that, don't we? I've met people, I swear to God, I've met people and I don't want to meet them. I'm in a coffee shop, and they'll come over and they'll tell me how much money they make and where they work. Why? They're looking for a relationship. They want somebody to talk to. They're lonely. They don't know how to have relationship anymore. Why? Back to the point. This is an inherent longing on our part to give ourselves to something for the sake of knowing ourselves through what we give ourselves to in a way that we cannot know ourselves apart from. I cannot know myself apart from the world that I live in, whether seen or unseen, until I meet that world, seen or unseen, and let that world reveal in me that which I have yet to discover is the truth of me. So that all relationships with all creatures, be they human, be they trees, butterflies, or bees, every relationship holds inherent in it for the individual first the wish to enter into it. No exceptions. It is what draws us to things. We are drawn because we want to merge with what we are drawn to, because through the act of love, something greater is made of ourselves, period. It is the act of love that enlarges our life. No other act genuinely enlarges it. And the reason that the act of love alone enlarges our life is because it is the merging of who and what we have been with that which we have yet to discover about ourselves, even though it is latent in us. This is an important passage. That which I am about to discover through you in me is latent in me, not conscious in me. My relationship with you reveals to me what was latent, and it was the relationship with my latency that I was seeking and that I am liberated by. Take a deep breath. How many of you understand what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm saying? Very important stuff. I can tell you every once in a while I know when it's important. This is important. And so I'm born into this body. I'm born into this world that is necessary for this body to move through and be nourished by. But I am also more than this body, and I am more than these thoughts and feelings that are themselves a creation of this world. We know for sure that there are worlds where thoughts and feelings are not the only form of communication, because even while we're in a body, we have experienced these worlds. And by the way, which conveys more? The instantaneous recognition and realization of a moment in which thought then comes along and tells you what it was, or all of that thought associating with itself and then defining the moment and confining you accordingly? The greater world is the world without thought, without feeling. It is the thoughts and feelings that then describe and ultimately confine us to believing that that's the only world there is for us to live in. And it is not, which is the whole point of everything we're talking about. So in this primordial, in this primordial desire, that which every human being, and it's not just human beings, you know that? I know we don't really see it, but I tell you it's true, even though it isn't seen yet. Maybe one day they'll know these things. Trees want to know trees. Trees want to know you. Everything wants to know. It's built into it. It's built into it. And the truth is that in one degree, although not in the way we would understand it, everything knows everything. It's just you and me. We're just outside of everything. We are. We're just outside of everything. And what's so strange is that we don't have to be that way, but we've become that way through a series of things that have taken place that only by their discovery can we, if you will, participate in their undoing, which is what we're going to talk about now, what we are talking about. Here's a story. We'll go this way for a second, because it'll help us make an important change in the direction of the talk. Amplifying something. And maybe some of you remember this. Were any of you ever young? Here's a young woman. And she's interested in science. Let's say she's interested in science. It doesn't matter. Young woman interested in science, young man interested in sport. It makes no difference what it is that the person's interested in. And the teacher continually comes to her and says something along the lines of, and I know you'll remember this, why aren't you working? Why are you taking the... Why won't you do what you know you're supposed to do? You have more in you than you're giving. Do you remember, were you ever fortunate enough, I might add, to have a teacher that didn't let you slide? Mom, Dad, if they were right, son, please wake up, you know, in a manner of speaking. Please, you can do more than this. Now, what were those teachers, those parents saying to us when they were saying that? Weren't they essentially saying to us, and you can choose the words that you want, wasn't each and every time that person came and said, look, and you said, why are you pushing, you know, because inwardly, isn't it so, why are you pushing me? Why are you doing this? Because you can be more than you are. Because I know you can be more than you are. That's why I'm doing this. I know that in you is more than you know is in you. Really, if you look at it, isn't that the essence of any relationship between student and teacher? The teacher has understood things that the student is yet to understand, and then the teacher can recognize the capacity the student has for integrating him or herself with the principles, and for the integration, a merging takes place in which the soul is enlarged because it enters into the world from which these principles come. So I know you can be more than that, the teacher says as they push. They don't just maybe say, I know you can be more than that. That's not necessarily what they're saying. But we understand they're saying that. But what happens to us when somebody does that? Now I'll bring the story around. What happens to us when we're in life and life brings us a moment? Life brings a lesson to us. Did you ever think that the moment where someone says something to you that you get negative about, the moment where the world turns left instead of going right, the moment where somebody breaks your heart instead of fulfilling your expectation, did you ever think that in that moment something was saying to you, I think you can be more than this? Oh, come on, try to see it. Be more than what? You know, have you ever done that? What do you want from me? You know, because you do get that feeling from time to time, don't you? What's the deal here? Hello? I think you can be more than this. Now, we're going to qualify more in a minute, because, boy, that's a loaded cannon there. I think you can be more than this. What is it that I can be more than? Follow the question? Here's the lesson, and essentially here's the resistance to the moment, because that's where we know lessons are. Lessons are kind of indicated to us, and the importance of them to the degree of our resistance to the moment. The more resistance you have to a moment, the greater the lesson is for you in it. Period. In the moment where, now, come on, who is the teacher? Here I am, I'm walking down the street, I'm engaged in a conversation, I'm in a relationship with somebody, and something hits the wall, and all of a sudden I'm racked. I'm in pain. I'm afraid of what may happen. You name it. Whatever the moment is, and try to see this extraordinary, great, eternal turning. And all of this turning producing conditions under which an individual is struck, and each individual struck differently by the same turning because they are measuring and reflecting that moment differently. And here comes this moment, and that lesson comes. That moment comes, and it says, you can be more than your resistance to this moment. You can be more than afraid. You can be more than confused. How many of you are more than confused? You can be more than bitter. You can be more than regretful. You can be more than resentful. You can be more than afraid. Oh, I hope I'm making this clear to you that there is an unseen, invisible cosmic curriculum, and that the curriculum is the expression of a wisdom whose purpose is to educate the soul to the existence of that intelligence that produced the curriculum. Why? So that I can love completely. So that I can see whatever it is that comes has not come against me, but has come to stir me for the purpose of releasing me from what it stirred. And that in every single event, in all instances as that, exists an opportunity for the individual, listen, to realize that beautiful, timeless truth that perfect love casts out fear. Why does perfect love cast out fear? Because perfect love is acting upon me. Now, I'm reaching a pivotal point in the talk here. We're roughly halfway through it. Can I be a free, how about just a simple word? Can I be a decent man? Can I be a decent woman if I live from a nature whose latent feature is fear? Can I? It is impossible, in case you don't know the answer. It is impossible. Now, I use the word latent fear because sitting here in the room or wherever you are, you're listening to this or you're having a nice dinner someplace, you're not sitting there trembling over your mashed potatoes. Unless they didn't put enough butter in them. But you're sitting there eating your mashed potatoes and you're, God help us, I'm so happy. You know, like everything is just perfect. A little pile of mashed potatoes. This is what we've been reduced to. This is the truth. This is the truth. And you better make those mashed potatoes right, because I've been thinking about them. And don't charge too much, or I won't enjoy them as much. And I'm not afraid. I don't have a fearful bone in my body. Well, the pile is now half gone. I'll let you think about that. Half of my potatoes are gone, and I'm still hungry, and you've got some on your table. And I look over, and here comes, oh no. How many of you know, oh no? And I don't register fear. I don't think to myself in that moment, oh my God, I'm so afraid of talking to this person. I don't want to see him. But the evidence that the fear that was latent in the nature is suddenly been activated. And I thought of this word again this morning. You've heard of the word reactive? Change that word to reactivated. Wasn't Frankenstein a reanimated creature? Life reactivates latent selves, latent forces that self is identified with, so that whatever it is that turns in the moment, the human being, unconscious to himself or herself, is sitting there exposed to the movement. The movement elicits that which was latent in this unconsciousness, and then the latent nature becomes what determines the path of the individual. His destiny is determined by a latent characteristic. In this instance, fear makes you turn. Now, you don't know, for instance, that the person that you're afraid of in that moment was coming to give you back the $100 he borrowed from you. This is my dream. Because, see, you've had arguments with him and he won't pay you back and he's bigger than you, or he's in some position of responsibility. That made me that. Why is it that wealthy people always borrow money from poor people? I had a friend, he had a lot of money. He never had any money. He's always, can you loan me a buck? Anyway, so here's this moment, and what was latent has become reactivated. And in its reactivation, I, in quotes, who didn't exist as a fearful self, now sit there eating my potatoes as an effect of this reactivation. Then, to further the idea for you, that which is resisting what has been reactivated, in other words, I don't want to deal with this, I don't want to meet the moment, what am I saying? I don't want, in quotes, to be greater than the fear. Why? Because there's no me there. There's just this self, this reactivated nature, this latent psychology, if you will, that suddenly pops to the forefront, that is now the governing body in my life. And in case I haven't made the point clear, it can't take the lesson in. It can't know anything about love because it actually lives outside of it. It actually lives outside of it. Love is not a feeling. Feeling is an expression of love. Love is not limited to a person, to a place, to a time, to a moment when or once. It is the eternal crux of our existence. And it is that to which we want to return. But we have yet to discover, now making the next segue, we have yet to discover the, if you will, the essential relationship through which we can find out for ourselves, not because somebody says it so, we can find out for ourselves that we live in a universe created by an intelligence whose purpose is to do what? Listen, it is to help us perfect our love in it, him, her, in God. How? By letting it perfect us. How does it perfect us? It perfects us through these moments of our lives for which most of us it seems incidental, in which the lesson comes. Now, we have become, you could write the words down if you want to, we have become lesson intolerant. We have become lesson intolerant. And I was thinking about this whole process, how it happened that we became lesson intolerant. And just put that on hold for a second, because I must insert this one idea, otherwise we'll miss everything. We've already spoken about how we can't learn if we resist. All remember this, that resistance keeps us from learning. Why, though, does resistance keep us from learning? What is it about resistance? Well, we said that it produces separation and isolation. Therefore, there can't be any exchange. But the real reason why we can't learn as long as we live from this nature that resists life is because of the following. Real learning always requires subordination to that which would teach us. Look, in case you haven't ever discovered this yet, it is not you who masters a principle. It is you who surrenders to it. Then it lends you the power that lives behind it, and then you can enact the principle. But if you've done it properly, you know that you had to yield to the principle before you understood its power. It's the exact same thing with God. It's the exact same thing with love. The love that you have created out of imagination always betrays you, because it leads you to those who also live in imaginary love. They are individuals who have no integration yet, and therefore look at you as a temporary source of nourishment or stimulation. And when they're done with you, not because they're cruel and mean, but because they're asleep, they will just cast you away. Why? Because they need the next source of stimulation for themselves that they will call love. And yet with each subsequent relationship, the cynicism will grow in the individual, because they realize that they are becoming something that they never intended to be. But now they can't stop themselves, because they have yet to understand the essential lesson behind what they have become. So there is this necessity. And I put this in for the sake of those of you who understand it. Christ washed the feet of his disciples. There is an eternal relationship between what would be called the greater and the lesser. But because the greater is continually giving itself to the lesser is always made greater if it will surrender to what the greater wants to give it. And then each time the lesser becomes the greater, if it's genuinely done that, then it understands the greater work and then will give itself again. And that's love. And it never stops because it was never born. It is your eternal right. But in order to realize that right, that beautiful creative love that in its heart is impersonal, but here on earth it becomes personal for us, that allows us, and I'll go back to what I was saying now, that in order to understand this relationship, it requires our surrender to that which we know won't betray us. I want, and this one day this will be a prayer of yours if it hasn't already become it. And it may be that if you can see it, that in scale, when you meet somebody, you may not say it, especially men might not say it because men are kind of oafy. I want to give you my heart. But God, I don't want you to hurt me. Because you see, I can't fully give you my heart as long as I think you might. I can't. And if you can understand that, then you realize the essential reason why human beings fail to find that fullness of love through the relationship made available by form is because the form is wrought with what? Division. We could say weakness. We could say, you know, character fault, all these things. But these are just words that describe an unintegrated state. We are the ones who condemn ourselves and others for our own lack of integration. God does not condemn us for our unintegrated state. He brings lessons to reveal that to us so that we can begin to transcend those parts of ourselves that keep us from entering into real relationship. So here's a man or a woman, and now they've been through, they've been up and they've been, what is it, around the merry-go-round, up through the carousel, dragged through whatever it is. You know, we've had a lot of experience. Some of it beautiful, no question about it. Some of it beautiful, some of it pretty rough. And because of the way in which the lesson in the moment was received when he or she did what he or she did, I become lesson intolerant. I don't want that again. And the moment that inwardly I don't want that again, I'm saying, I don't want to get hurt again, but can you understand that if one says, I don't want to be hurt again, they are also saying there are limits to the way in which I will love. Can you? See, that we don't think to ourselves that. We don't think to ourselves, let's have a limited love. Or do they say that now? Is that what a prenup is? Yes, it is, by the way. So if you can turn this around, and I'm just hoping that you can, if you can start to see, because now I'm talking to you about a relationship with the divine. I'm talking about what is required if one is to become, actually know what oneness is, to become one. One doesn't know what one is, one becomes one. In order for that to be, I'm going to have to love God so completely that no matter what it is that God gives to me, I know it is being given to me for the sake of the furtherance and the perfection of that love that I would know. Now, for those of you who have trouble with the idea of loving God, if you can learn what it means to love life, you are loving God. Because there's nothing that takes place in life, including all of the ugliness in it, that isn't part of a person's preparation for discovering within himself or herself the eternal ability to transcend what has been disturbed. And the way in which the eternal process of transcending what is disturbed takes place is through an act of love. Why? Because integration removes us from the level of opposites that was disturbed. Now, I know that's a big sentence. Sometimes I can see sentences coming, and it's like in Vegas, one of those things where you pull the bandit thing, what do they call it? Slot machines. And I can see some of your eyes go stars, sevens, bullets, you know, because sometimes it's just difficult to get. But you can understand the emotion of this if you don't understand the words yet. This is a language unto its own. There's no question about it. It has been a language unto its own since the true teachings were sown onto this planet. Do you really think that the Sanhedrin gave Judas 30 pieces of silver? Do you really think a certain number of fish were pulled from the sea in a net? Do you really think that water and wine represent actual water and wine? These are words that are expressed in a form of esoteric secret teachings for the purpose of those individuals who at a certain point want to learn for themselves what it takes to be in relationship with that world. And everything is part of it. Everything that happens is part of it. There's no part that's not. Every part. So wherever you are, what's taking place is a way in which you and I have an opportunity to do what I'm going to now outline, because I only have another 10 or 12 minutes left. I'm going to outline what I am going to call these three steps. All right, the first one. I must learn to see the good of being acted upon. I must learn to see the good of being acted upon. What does that mean? It means I need to see at once, basically what we've been describing, that lessons ride in on the back of events, that here comes a lesson. Here's somebody who's rude beyond belief. And what do I do with that moment? What do I usually do when people are unpleasant or unkind towards me? I reciprocate in kind, don't I? In other words, the moment stirs in me. Remember, it reactivates in me a latent unkindness, a latent judge. I identify, I act from the latent judge, the lesson comes by. The lesson doesn't release me from that latent unconscious nature. It actually solidifies it in me, so that the tendency is to return to it with less stimulation. How many of you can see that that's so? Because, you know, impatience breeds impatience, doesn't it? Have you not noticed that? Rudeness breeds rudeness. And with rudeness, impatience, whatever the negative state is, comes all of the subsequent ways in which I justify what I am. Notwithstanding that the whole world sees me in a way I can't see myself. So, the first is I have to see the good of being acted on. I have to realize that the lesson has come to me, that moment of resistance, that moment where I don't want has happened. I have to realize that there is something in that for me. That's the first stage of developing this, what we're calling perfect faith. And I want to say this before I go to number two. Love is greater than faith. It is faith that leads us to perfect love. Because perfect love teaches us through itself, through these lessons that life brings, that we can have faith that there is goodness in them if we will surrender to them. I learn the goodness in it by surrendering to it, not resisting it. Number two of the three ways, I have to agree to see what is revealed by these acts upon me. First, here comes the act. Here comes life. It doesn't sound like the ice cream truck all the time. Do you remember the ice cream truck?
Yes.
The good Huber man, you know. Boy, you remember that? You'd go running, wouldn't you? You could be in your bath. How come you don't go running for everything? Do you understand the parallel? Because see, the ice cream, positive reinforcement. You know, give me something with chocolate on it, good vanilla nuts maybe. Give me somebody that's nuts. I don't go running that way. I want to run away from them, don't I? I have to agree to see what is revealed by these acts. It means, listen closely, I have to decide in favor of what I intuit is true. I have to choose in favor of intuition over inhibition. I have to choose in favor of intuition over inhibition. And guess which is a lot stronger in our present nature now? Inhibition. Why? Because I have the backing of all the pain that I've had. All the pain, so many painful lessons, so many ways that I feel I've been betrayed. And I just want to make this one point clear to you. You have not been through what you think you've been through. You have put yourself through what you think you've been through, and take what you've put yourself through as being what God has done to you, and you did it to you. More accurately, this nature that is asleep in itself and the darkness of itself does this to itself so it can stimulate itself and produce a sensation of life that has nothing to do with the love of it. So, number two, I have to agree to see what is revealed by these acts. I have to actually start with this, and it is, it's a baby faith. It's a baby faith. You know, I'm so sorry for the world in one respect. There's nothing that any of us can do. Certainly I can't do anything about the world other than do my own part in acting out what I know is true to discover a greater relationship with that which won't betray me. You look at human beings today and they're filled with faith. Faith, faith, schmaith. What they have is the love of the image that resides in their mind, the icon that as they have faith in it, stimulates them and actually produces an isolation from the possibility of love instead of the discovery of it. Because unless faith leads to love, born out of discovering that that which acts upon us is working in our favor, then that faith is a way in which I isolate and insulate myself from those acts by saying that I don't want what happens, but I have faith that there's something right going on. You can't not want what has happened and have faith. It is impossible. Can you see it? Number three. I have to see the good of being acted upon, meaning I have to see the good of the music. Sometimes there's dissonance. Sometimes they're just flat notes, sharp notes. Yeah. I have to see the good of that. Then I have to agree to see what is revealed by that note, and we'll use the word note. Here's this note, here's this act, here's this movement, and it has a vibration, all things do. Here's this vibration, and here's this vibration that is produced by it. Prior to that vibration, and we discussed this, I did not know that this latent sound was in me, this latent fury. This latent gentleness. I didn't know that these latent qualities of a consciousness of which I am the incorporation of, but that is greater than what it has incorporated, meaning that this exists, God's life, your true nature, is far greater than the reflection of it in this body. It is the perpetual discovery of the relationship between what we have mistaken ourselves to be because of this sensory isolating device, and the discovery that all of that isolation that this is doing is actually, and I want to get to this because it's so important, I'm going to get to number three, that inside of this resistance, isn't resistance refusal? Isn't it? Isn't resistance a form of organic refusal? Now let's start simple. Just take like two compounds and you put them together, and if they resist one another, there is actually an organic refusal on the parts of this material. Yay? Yeah. So there's refusal and resistance. Now turn it to psychology, to spirituality. Isn't refusal the same as rebellion? It is. For those of you who want to think about slightly deeper Judaic Christian principles, although it does run through most of the major religions, that idea. Yeah, there. I'm a rebel. I am a rebel with a cause. And I'm my own cause. Except that I'm not that cause and I'm not the rebellion. I must choose which I want. Which brings me to number three. I have to surrender myself to both that revealing force and to that which that force revealed. Now, I know it's a lot. Just go slow with me. I have to surrender myself. Now, we've reached a very important point in our gathering, in our meeting. When I say I have to surrender myself, what am I talking about? I'm talking about this resistance, aren't I? The self that resistance has formed. Take a deep breath. I don't want to lose you. We're right near the end. It's important. How many of you get up in the morning and say, you know, today I'm really going to hate somebody. Today I'm going to have a moment outside where I wish the whole world would just end. We don't do that, do we? Yet, comes those moments, comes life acting, and all of a sudden, up will come this extraordinary resentment, a great hatred, a regret, a rebellion. No, we say to life, yes or no? Did that self appear who is rebelling, who is refusing, who has resisted? Does that self, did that order of thought appear prior to the moment in which it was stirred into existence? The answer is no, it wasn't there. The world turned and I turned on the world. But the I that turned back on the world did not exist until the world revealed in me that quality. Now, just because what Fenelon said, that a stone beneath the surface of the earth weighs as much as one on the surface of the earth. Those qualities that remain latent inside of myself that I am unconscious to doesn't mean that I am not controlled by. That's evident. That's child play. So what we're saying here is that by God's mercy, oh, and by an act of justice, that's too much to try to throw this. If I throw the word justice into this talk now, you'll all go to sleep on me. It is a perfect act of justice every moment the world turns, because it is revealing what we have manifested, and what we have manifested is revealed to the manifestor, to that which produced it, and it is saying, do you like it, son? And if we're awake, we go, no. And it says, good, because you can be more than what manifested this moment that you don't want, because the moment you don't want isn't this moment. It is the you that has met it. And if I see that that's the truth, that I have identified with the rebellion, I have identified with that which is resisting the grace of God's life itself, if I see that clearly, that seeing cannot agree anymore with it. That awareness will not betray itself, because the awareness is, as we've said already, this ground in which all of this beautiful creation is taking place, that is the expression of love. So when we say, I have to surrender myself, I'm saying, I have to wake up to the moment to discover that that which is resisting this moment isn't I at all. It is a reactivation of something that has been living in the dark of me. And that if I will allow in that moment to bring myself and allow that light of awareness to act upon what has been reactivated, that light will do, and this is the final point of the talk, that light will do what I have been yet unable to do for myself, which is to consent in being recreated, I'll use the words, in an image greater than I can imagine. I am actually recreated in the moment I surrender to God's creation. Because the light, the love that is the principal force, along with the will, acts upon itself. This interior field that we call the unconsciousness. And I'm not a psychologist, so forgive me if I mangle words that don't fit the exact formula in which the educational world has said this exists. I'm sorry for that. But nevertheless, this great field of darkness with all of this latent energy, these latent forms, all themselves some primordial, some formed by consciousness, resisting life, that as all of that is touched by this light, whatever this light touches is transformed. It is changed accordingly. And it is that change that takes place when this light touches what has been formerly in the dark, that there is indeed an integration. There is indeed a love act. And the evidence of the love act is that what emerges from it, the new consciousness the individual has that places him in new relationship with the world outside and inside, is that he is no longer capable of being and doing what he or she was just before that took place. So to finish this talk, in order to perfect our love in God and to realize oneness, we must let God perfect our love in Him. God perfects our love in Him by showing us through His movement within and without that which is yet to have been perfected by the light that reveals it. And that is eternal. Faith that finally gives way to love is because love allows faith to grow. Not faith in images, not faith in ideas, not even faith in principle, but faith born out of principle applied. Because in the application of principle is born the evidence of the truth of that principle. And in the evidence of the truth of that principle, one stands upon something that always existed in him, only that he never knew was another latent part of himself, a latent ground. Only that ground is born in reality that is timeless versus the ground that he presently stands on that gives way every time he tries to prove it to himself.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.org. That's GUYFINLEY.org. Receive helpful free gifts along with a host of life-changing information. That's guyfinley.org.